Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining. We've waited a couple of minutes and gone beyond start time, so I won't hold you up with heavily conflicted schedules and especially the folks on the phone. Is it just Henry there at the moment?
Hi, everybody.
Henry Chan, excellent. And we've got a couple of apologies from Keith Davidson and Martin Boyle, who have deemed that internet governance is more important and have decided to go there instead. That wasn't their words, that was mine. My name is Paul Schindler, chair of this study group and general manager for international and government affairs for AUDA. Thank you all for making some time to join along. Good to see that we're getting well into the process and we're not completely dropping off all numbers of this group. Today's session is one that I've sort of loosely deemed to be the fun one, because we've sat and we've talked about the theoretical and what might happen, the policies that are out there, what country names may and may not appear in future or current processes. And then, of course, ICANN was good enough to give us the reveal back in on the 13th of June. So what I wanted to do, hello, was pretty much devote this session to picking apart what's come out of the new GTLD process, not to target that process, not to target any of the applicants, but simply because this is the first opportunity we have to look at some data while we're still waiting on UNESCO and the survey process. We get to see what's actually come out and to see how that clashes or coincides with some of the categories or the taxonomy that we've developed earlier in the group. And I've probably covered off my first half a dozen slides by talking then. Apologies, it's a bit small up on the screen, but we've already covered off the welcome and a couple of the apologies that we've received. I just want to do a very quick status update and then devote the majority of this time to talking about the applications that have come in. And then I just had a question at the end, an open one for everyone that's here, about their perceptions on this study group and its deliverables and its recommendations, because before we get to developing a final report and making recommendations, I just want to ensure there's a level of consistency across the room in terms of everyone's expectations. Because throughout the course of this meeting, I've been made aware of those in the community that are starting to hear about this group and they're not quite sure about it and what is this dreaded survey and, you know, things like that. But, you know, I do want to make sure that there's at least consistency in this group and mutual understanding of where we expect to get and what we'll be delivering to CCNSO Council and back out to other constituencies when we finish. The status update's just very short. The survey is still with UNESCO at this stage. Obviously, the categories were finalised. The survey was finalised and agreed back in Costa Rica or possibly just before. And what has held us up now is really just logistical arrangements, that the survey needs to be translated into the languages of the UN. That costs money, and through the partnership agreement that ICANN and UNESCO have, ICANN has agreed to provide that funding. So it's simply a case of one team's legal area just chatting with another group's financial area, and they're working those details out. I was comfortable with the delay to an extent because we still have really until the Toronto meeting, and then any input we get from the survey is still timely, but it really can't go much longer than that. So if I do get any further updates, I'll share them with the group. I developed a brief progress report and I'd shared it with Bart, and I do need to send it out to the rest of the group, but it's just the usual two-pager on much like the FOI working group delivered, you know, where we're at and where we're going to go with our next steps. There will be a few opportunities where I'll be speaking to various community members here in Prague, but not as many as at our last meeting, simply because there's probably not a lot to update them on between meetings. The last one obviously is new GTLDs have been announced, or the applications have been announced, and there are a whole bunch of issues with that. This is just my summary, which is completely illegible over this distance, but I like numbers, so I just did a little bit of a breakdown of the 1,930 applications that came in. And just roughly speaking, 730 of them are contested, 731, and they're contesting for 230 strings. So you can see there's quite a concentration of competition. Now, this is the .apps and the .llcs and et cetera, which have a considerable number of applicants going for each one. Of more relevance to us, there are 66 geographic applications, almost entirely relating to cities, and the vast majority of which do have some stated support or explicit support from the local council or the governance of the city. Community applications are 84, And interestingly, I hadn't seen anyone pull out how many three-letter codes were actually applied for. It turns out it's 375 of the 1,900 three-letter codes. That's obviously highlighted because that ties back to the ISO list. And then 49 of them are actually contested. And again, another example there is .app. 660 brands. I decided to highlight, look, 9/11. I don't know whether that's just a fluke, but North America, 9/11 applications, but only 17 from Africa. Perhaps I'm just making my own observation about the geographical spread there. Asia Pacific was somewhere in the 300, 600 odd from Europe and 24 from Latin America from memory. And IDN's had a very good spread of different scripts. It wasn't heavily weighted towards one script, but actually across 114 applications with actually seven contested within that space. And then I've had a bit of a dig down a little bit further into some that have turned up, and this I've really just taken this from the interchange that Keith facilitated. He raised a couple of issues on the list a few weeks ago, and semi-tongue-in-cheek, but anything that could be vaguely not associated with a country name, and I've admitted that they're a bit of a stretch, but Finnish, that's Finnish dishwashing liquid in this particular case, or dishwashing powder, whatever it might be, but that was one that was sort of thrown up in terms of only being one character different from the demonym for folks from Finland. Viking and Kiwi were included in the list as well, and unfortunately Keith's not here to speak to that, but they've got a double issue there because not only is it a common description of how New Zealanders would identify themselves, but they are going through a process of that having possibly being introduced as a 2LD, so Kiwi.nz. So it's just something that's front and centre of their minds. And a story I'll share about New Holland, and I don't know whether Bart's got particular views about that one, but I raised it, and I hope my former government colleagues don't mind, but I raised it with the Australian GAC representatives and said, well, what are you going to do about it? And they said, what? And I said, New Holland. Ooh, we didn't see that on the list. And they twigged straight away as to the significance, which is basically what the Dutch called Australia when they were the first to find us, the lands that became Australia back in the 1600s. It is not and has never been an official name, but it was what the landmass and what eventually became the country was known as. And I simply raised it with them almost as in jest. But their reaction was very, they became very ashen, and their reaction was very serious about, we actually need to look into this closely, we need to make sure we're covered or where this comes up under the process. So I apologise to people in this group if occasionally I sound a bit cynical or a bit protectionist about country names, but I'm simply putting my government hat on and channeling them and pretending, well, what would my bosses, you know, how would my bosses feel, what would my bosses in government want me to do, and what would I start jumping up and down about? And I would personally would have expected no concerns about New Holland, but that's not the reaction I got back from them. So it's sometimes through that prism that we need to remember to look at how names might be treated. Beyond those, there are actually a few that I've come up with that are of particular interest, and rather than just presenting them, I just wanted to get a feel of the room or views from different people about what this means and what significance does this have for our deliberations and should we say, we will not say anything. The study group, of course, will not say anything. It's not within our charter to do so. But just these are actually really concrete examples of some of the issues that we've raised in our topology. So Google's gone ahead and has applied for .and as an abbreviation of Android. They've applied for .r and from the brief scan of the application, it was simply a case of we are, they are. It was something as ludicrously broad as that, not something specific to represent a product. And .est, with the intention being biggest, fastest, strongest, etc. Again, that's exactly what was in the application. So the folks from Andorra, United Arab Emirates, and Estonia may take some issue with those applications. Now, I mean, are there any preliminary observations on those three, or comments, or thoughts that people have about what this means? I mean, this is immediately relevant to some of the discussions we've had. Please. Yes.
Just more general comments, maybe, but we need some clarification as to was what's the status of the list we have now? Because I've discussed with some GAC colleagues, and we are not sure if the list is washed in a way. So because you have clear, in the applicant guidebook. The applicant guidebook says, for example, that you need a letter of approval for some country names or city names. And if they don't have that letter of approval, will they then still be on this list? We don't know that because it also creates difficulty for the GAC towards the early warning. Should we take the early warning and say, listen, you have some applicants that are three codes for countries, or you have a capital city name that doesn't have a support letter? Why are they on the list? They should not be on the list in the first place because they're not real applicants, so they don't meet the terms of being real applicants. So, looking at you all the time. I'm sorry for that. But I asked the chair of the GAC, and she said that she thought that if an applicant were incomplete, an application was incomplete, as missing a support letter, it should not be on the list. But if they had a support letter, it will be on the list because then GAC would have to see if the right authority has written this support letter. So we have some questions that we will ask the board in our meeting towards how the status of the list are. And we are not quite sure, actually, because the three letter codes for country names should, not be there in the first place. No,
that's a very valid observation. There's a few people that wanted to speak first, but Tony had his hand up because I think he could speak to that just specific point, so please.
If I can get close to the microphone. Yes, my name is Tony Harris. I'm from the ISP constituency and also an applicant in the new GTLD program. I don't mean to answer what was just said, but basically, if I look at these strings you have up there, and my first comment would be, are they direct string contention with any of the listed geographical names in the ISO and whatever lists are specified in the guidebook? If that's not the case, I don't see why they should be a cause for concern. It will be, obviously, there will be any number of strings that have currently been applied for and may well come up in future rounds where you have a sequence of characters that can be a part of a name, of a full name, a fuller name, which would obviously have to do with a country or city. But how far can you go in blocking these applications without being unfair to the applicants? You have to have some ground rules before the applicant goes and puts down $185,000 and invests perhaps twice that much in his business plan and activities.
And just two words or less, yes, I agree with you, and yes, they are. And this is only my reading of the list, so obviously not an authoritative reference on what is a conflict and isn't, but those top three are actually on the ISO 3166 Alpha 3 list, which of course violates, or that's a direct contradiction of Part 2 or the second criterion to define what is a country or territory for the purposes of the new GTLD process. That's what the applicant guidebook says. There were many others that were similar, and as I said, it's 300 plus three-letter codes that I trawled through, but those are ones that are actually on the ISO list. So there's no ambiguity there.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't realize they were on the list. And if they are on the list, they're in trouble.
Annabeth, did you want to say something now, or...?
It's kind of been said, but they are on the list. These three are the problems, and all other three letter codes, of course, they don't have a problem, but these have. But then back to the question of Elisa, since they are there, it kind of proves that it hasn't been washed because they should have seen that in the first place and taken them out before it was published. Shouldn't be necessary for the GAC to take them in an early warning. They should never be there.
That is something we'll take under advisement. We'll certainly look into further, but I'm just conscious that I'm making people wait, so we'll come back to that one.
Yeah. Christopher, Vice Chair, Finance Operations of the BC. And I think to answer the question, it isn't a washed list, of my understanding. It is the list of applicants, no more than that. Maybe an applicant wouldn't have been valid if it hadn't sent a cheque or the money hadn't arrived, but from a cursory glance, and just for the transcripts that I've got it in front of me, it's clause 22141, part 1, with the Alpha 3 code. So perhaps, I don't know, perhaps Google missed it. It's an expensive miss, isn't it? 3x185.
But it does. So thank you for that clarification, and I will, as I'm sure others will seek to get further clarification on that. And certainly if somebody finds out some more, it would be great if they could share that with this list, as will I, if I get some more information from that. It's interesting that we're getting a perspective from the chair of the GAC, which is Heather's perspective or her understanding, nothing definitive at this stage. So that just means that there's a general lack of understanding in the community, and it's certainly from the perspective of the GAC, it's important that they have that understanding because they need to know what they're dealing with at this case. So, and I know that you can certainly tell some constituents these things many times, but it is important that it be very clear at this time. Tony, did you just briefly read?
Just for the comment that was made, they shouldn't be there on the applicant list. I think probably the answer is that the application, and having gone through the application process myself, it's not the software is not prepared to reject anything on the basis of these lists. The evaluators do that. That's my understanding.
Anyhow. It would require human intervention. Yes. Yes.
This is Heather Forrest, representing the IPC. My understanding, and this is of course a question in the timelines, but administrative completeness check is the thing. It's not even the evaluation that falls into play here, but the administrative completeness check in terms of picking up whether a government support letter was missed or this sort of thing. And although ICANN hasn't really included that in its timelines to date, its more recent ones, the 29 May and 30 May, it seems that that's scheduled for 8 weeks after the close of the tags, which we're still in. So I assume that that process, we have to assume that that process is still going on.
Again.
And then just a short comment that we initially had a 60 days early warning period, so that if the list is not washed in any way and they're supposed to do this later on, then we will have a lot of work in the government working on this list and making comments on applications that should never have been there. So I think we just asked the board for clarification on that one. Now we don't have the digital archery anymore. We have probably a much longer early warning period and so on. So we have new criteria, but still we will ask.
Okay, I'll leave that one for the time being, but it is just, I think the reason that it caught my attention so very much was we had in the course of this group headed off towards less likely examples, ones sitting more on the periphery. It would be highly unlikely if somebody applied for something, and we got fairly out there with some of the ideas we discussed, because it is our responsibility to discuss all possibilities or as many possibilities as we can. And yet, from my perspective, I largely took the ones that were set in concrete, that is, it is not, you can't misinterpret the ISO list, it's a list, and it should therefore be straightforward. So I was very surprised, especially from relatively prominent organisations, to see something like this come up. Again, IDN was another example. That is an application that has come in, and it's my understanding that IDN isn't on the reserve list, much like TLD and others are. But irrespective, it is the three-letter code for Indonesia, but it has come from an applicant in India that's looking at offering some sort of product or space related to IDNs. Less important, I also picked up that, maybe only because I've used it as an example before, that the BAR for BAR has appeared. There are two applicants for it, and it falls into a slightly different category because that's not on the ISO list. So this gets back to lists and the fallibility of lists and what happens when things don't necessarily fit into a finite model that you've set for it. Because whilst you will see rather rapid Olympians racing in London for Barbados with BAR on there, and certainly they use that as a code in a number of other fora, not in ours. The ISO list is BRB, so there are no grounds there for an objection according to the ISO list at least. But it is one that comes up as, it's a slightly different example because it isn't on the list that we've all been using as a fundamental. This was just another small example, and I honestly don't know what I think about this one yet because I'd only trawled through it over the last few days. But under three letter codes, there are a number of transliterations applied for by VeriSign. I'm sorry I'm naming names, but we all know. I mean, this is who applied for it. Which transliterate as either com or in some cases .com. The script actually means .com. So this is Cyrillic and Hebrew and a whole bunch of other character sets. And it comes back to the issue of one we discussed where we talk about the coexistence between ISO lists and should they be grandfathered or will they become less relevant as time goes by because the namespace is now expanded and you can have a more meaningful representation of your country or your business or your product than being theoretically limited to three letters because that's how people commonly understand the space at the moment. But rather, and how that coexists, how the ISO list coexists with .com, which is, of course, on the ISO list, but that's not going to change anything. .com is not going to disappear, even if it is on the list. And we generally talked about the acceptance of, well, that is what is, and there, that's a grandfathered circumstance. VeriSign then applied for all these transliterations, which, at least in my reading, I don't think are in violation of the rules on the list, because whilst the short or long form name of a country is protected in all languages, the reference to the ISO list is simply the ISO list, which is published in English and French, I think, and that's it. It's not the ISO list or other representations in other scripts. That's not the wording of the guidebook. So again, I'm not proposing there's anything wrong with it. It's just that I'm just highlighting that this is another interesting circumstance where somebody falls into a slightly different category. Why shouldn't VeriSign have all these versions of .com? It's probably perfectly fine. But yet it is an ISO three-letter code, and countries are asserting their rights with regards to three-letter codes, and we grandfathered some. And then you come to this circumstance where there are some that are a little bit different. So I'm not sure how I feel about this one yet. It's probably coming across in the way I try to describe it, but it is just an interesting circumstance where VeriSign's internet real estate could legitimately expand in this space, and then if rules were to change or to be set or to be slightly different for round two, it would prohibit others from doing that. But again, that's just a case of this is one that's out there at the moment. And no, I don't expect an interjection or a complaint from a government particularly about that one. It's just an observation. Annabeth?
Just a comment. It's kind of fun because we started all this because we wanted, or ICANN wanted, a competition for .com. That was the original intent. And now the same actor takes all the different scripts for .com. So there goes the competition.
A little bit of irony there, but fair enough too, I guess, because who better than VeriSign? That may not give rise to a particular issue, but it was just one I wanted to highlight. The next one on the other hand... Oh, sorry, there was just another quick one. Demonyms or those references to countries, to residents from a country, that is folks from Italy are Italian, folks from Australia are Australian, folks from the Netherlands are Dutch. Yeah, that's consistent. But irrespective, there were applications for .Irish and .Swiss, and while I haven't yet had an opportunity, and so what, people may ask, fair enough, that is not a country name. But the competition for Swiss has come from government or at least agencies within the government. And part of the statement there, and I did go into some depth in reading their application, it was both for the branding of the country, the products, things that come out of Switzerland, the association that they claim with quality that's associated with the term in a number of manufacturing or product fields, but also because, and I actually said this, because their CCTLD is CH. And that is counterintuitive for many people, for folks that are not residents of Switzerland. They say all the Swiss understand it. Of course they do. But they'd actually said it's not particularly intuitive. So that's why we have an interest in .Swiss. Sorry, Heather had a comment.
one of the things to note on that one is the Swiss government has only just recently passed a number of initiatives. They call them the Swissness initiatives. They've rewritten trademark law to include various protections for geographic names above and beyond geographic origin, the champagne and these sorts of things, to really rope geographic names into trade protection and trademark protection. And so this doesn't really come as a surprise. If you type into Google Swissness initiative, it'll pull it right up, what the government's working on in this area.
Well, thank you for the clarification. It's good to understand some of the background of it, and as part of my education exercise, I'll seek to speak to the Swiss GAC reps hopefully throughout the course of this meeting to see what their involvement, or at least their understanding or awareness of this is. And then, of course, the interesting counterpoint that, you know, one of their fairly significant brands, and that is Swiss Air, has gone alone itself and applied for Swiss as well. Now, again, I acknowledge that we're stretching the definitions. Nobody's arguing that is a country or territory. Of course, it is not. But it does get back to the concept of self, or the concept of sovereignty or nationhood that a government or a state may wish to exert. And if they say it's theirs, or they say that they have a right in it, or they have an objection to somebody else having it, it's just handy for us to understand that, not to judge that or to say that's right or wrong, but just because it's an interesting point. The one I wanted to spend a bit of time on today was the application that came in for .Thai, and I have Professor Canciano over there from THNIC. Please join us at the table for the microphone, because she's raised an interesting point, or she's got an interesting case study, interesting for us perhaps, disconcerting for them. About the application that's coming for .Thai, and I won't work through it because otherwise I would be repeating it secondhand. But you had a few points that you've made about, this is a Thai-based company. I think you mentioned a Malaysian registrar, but I'd be happy. I think it'd be fascinating just to hear it in your own words if you're happy to.
It's quite a very interesting case because the word Thai also represents a country in our own language, because land, L-A-N-D, is an English word. So we normally refer to our country as Thai. And in English, we say Thailand. So the application came from a company with the Malaysian registry, and sent to the in the category of community based, and they got a letter of support from the Minister of ICT himself without any knowledge of the staff in the ministry, and another letter was from the Permanent Secretary of the Ministry of Interior, which has nothing to do with internet, and they got we got contacted from the Prime Minister office and several other ministers who declined to support them, but they did not include that in the application. And in the application, they say they will cooperate closely with THNIC. They came to talk to us, and we explained to them that this should not be done because we have two country codes, CCTLD, and this is not, it's going to be confusing. Right now I heard that there's a GAC letter to, a GAC representative sent a letter to ICANN. And another conflict that is interesting is that the word THAI, when you write it in Thai, which sounds exactly the same, is our IDN. CCTLD. So there's so many conflicts in this case, and I don't know what will happen to this application.
Thank you for that. It's a very interesting case study, and Chandra and I discussed it at some length a couple of days ago. And it's not so much that it may or may not be in violation of certain rules here or there, etc., but the way the process is created uncertainty for you. There isn't any, again, if it's not a washed list, if it's not filtered in any way, it's left up in the air, and you're not left with any certainty because it has a letter of government support. So that ticks one very significant box. And if it is just the box of administrative completeness, well, that's fine, but it does cause some concern to members of the community until it's further assessed. Annabeth, do you want to say that?
Thank you. It's about the government letter. What the applicant guidebook says is that countries are out, doesn't help with a letter from government. The other things, cities, capitals, areas, counties, but this is nothing of that. So actually, if it had not been a country or a representation of a country, they wouldn't have needed a support letter. So this is a kind of confusion between words. So I would say not any confusion at all, of course, but it seems for me that this is your way to say your own country name in your language, and probably it will be go away. It shouldn't have been allowed if it really is a country. And if it's not, you don't need the support because it's not a city.
So it's not a geographic term. Yes, it's what it is.
It's a geographic thing, but just like Swiss, the same, in a way.
No, it's a good point, and I was equally measured when we had our conversation, and I felt like saying, you should be fine. This should work out okay. And then, I don't know. You don't know. And, of course, I'm not quite sure about this, but in terms of the list that we have, it's obviously not an ISO-related term. I think it's not actually the official short-form name of the country, nor the long-form. You refer to the country. It's not exactly... I mean, you're talking about the way in which Thai people refer to the country, and they use a Thai, but both the long-form and the short-form are actually longer than that.
I look at the guidebook. There is a separable name of the country, and Thailand was not listed in that list. But I read in the guidebook also, they said the list is maintained by ICANN staff. So our GAC, I think he wrote to ICANN asking them to add our entry to the list. That means they want to reserve Thai Siam, which is our old country name, and Kingdom of Thailand, which is the formal name of the country.
Heather had her hand up, I think.
I think there's an interesting question that perhaps, or certainly exceeds this specific example, which is we have that comment in the guidebook, and it's a comment to what, 2.2.4.1.2, I think, that says that this business with the letters of government support is really a domestic issue, that it's up to every country to decide where a letter of support comes from and how many letters of support are needed at the various levels of government. So if it's a city, do we need city and council, broader county and national government, or this sort of thing. So it strikes me that raises an interesting question in terms of that suggests that ICANN won't act on its own to check up as to when we talk about this administrative completeness check. And it's one thing to say, yes, a letter of support has been provided, but it's another thing entirely to say that the letter has come from the right the government department, let's say. And it seems very clear in the guidebook that will not be initiated by ICANN. That is something that an applicant undertakes to do by itself, and I think conversely we see in the next phase of this process that's something then that the government, be it the GAC representative or otherwise, has to take upon him or herself to raise. So, but it raises an interesting point as to what level of intervention we'll have from ICANN in that, as well as the BAR, some of these three-letter codes, to the extent that an applicant has taken it upon themselves to designate their application as geographic, whether or not that sits within the letter of 2.2.4.1. That's another question as well. Anyone could have ticked that box in question 22 and said, yes, my application is geographic. So it raises some interesting issues as to what ICANN will do.
Good observation. I'm certainly very happy to wander down that hypothetical track a little bit. Obviously, it's a relief for me that for the purposes of this study group, that issue is not immediately relevant because, as Annabeth said, if it's a country name, forget it, it's out. But, again, it's an interesting hypothetical. There is a lack of clarity around how those letters of support will now be processed. Yes, there is early warning, but will there be aggressive, not assessment by ICANN, but pushing it back to governments or interested stakeholders to say this application has come in? And it's a finite number. We know how many it is now. We know how many are geographic and we know how many are community. To go back to those communities, find out who it should be and say, you know, is this legitimate? Is this the appropriate authority? Or will it simply be left to GAC, which of course is not representative of all governments of the world, nor regularly engaged by all governments of the world to provide some sort of injection. Somebody at some stage, is there an assessment process? I can't recall whether there was whether there was a panel or an expert group that was looking at this. But a geographic panel?
Exactly as you said, there's so many countries that are not represented in the GAC, and that is exactly why we put it in the guidebook. So we will put a full stop on it, also for the countries who are not aware of the whole ICANN GAC thing. And listening to this, I'm kind of worried now. well, we're worried about many things, about early warning, but it doesn't help, because now we also have to look into probably if ICANN doesn't take any responsibility of taking out what's in the guidebook, what's the use of the guidebook? Because you use also money when you send this in. The early warning is meant so you will have a lot of the feedback. We will have a long ICANN GAC meetings this week, so it will be discussed.
Yes, and the reason I'm, again, you know, cautiously saying, look, it doesn't apply to country and territory names at this time. But what if there was some impetus, some push in the next round of the process? We don't expect it to go that way, but for round two, countries and territories are fair game, and the same rules that are currently applied to geographic locations, that is, you must have a letter of support, are applied to countries and territories as well. You would kind of want that process to be completely clear and unequivocal, and there'd be no doubt about who will be doing what and who will be verifying what before that actually happens. And obviously it's not there for this round, it's just something to be aware of for the next.
So we had an example, I won't say the person who called me, but he said that I want this and this. And I said, well, that's a geographical term up to the guide, but then you need a support letter. And he said, oh, that would be like waking a sleeping bear, because I don't think this person is in the GAC. So I think that maybe I just... So you say that I always need this? And I said, yes, that's the whole point. It will stop you. It is a reassurance. And oh, no, boring. So we thought we had put the mechanism there.
And then, of course, it's just how the mechanism is implemented and who's steering the thing as to whether there's diligence behind it. And obviously, I don't know, there's a lack of clarity there. It's probably pertinent to share... Heather can block her ears because I'm going to talk about Oz Registry here for a little bit, but the example, again, in the Australian context of geographical terms with .dot Melbourne and .dot Sydney. Now, I understand that from Nominet's perspective, being both the policy body and maintaining registry operations, that they've taken a conscious decision to support a number of new GTLDs, Wales, for instance. And they're entirely entitled to do that. But in our particular case, because Australia has a separated model where the registry operates under contract with ALDA, they can go off and do whatever they want to do as long as they meet the contractual standards. Don't take your eye off the .au ball. Continue to run .au well and according to the guidelines that we've set, but then you can go ahead and do whatever else you want. So Oz Registry is now a supporting partner for Sydney and Melbourne. The driving entities behind that, though, were the local city councils, so the Melbourne City Council and the Sydney Lord Mayor's Office or whatever it was, and then also the state and territory government. So there you go. There's two letters of support that are strong. The state government and the city's government has said we support these projects. And then, of course, there was a point at which the federal government, my GATT colleagues, picked up the phone or wrote them a letter saying, and when do you expect to get a letter of when are you going to ask for endorsement from the Federal Minister for Communications? Because the Australian government should have a say in this as well. And, okay, that in our country creates a lot of issue between state and federal politics, and it's an ongoing thing. But the whole issue is there are some valid concerns from the federal level, because what happens if this is run under a different set of rules is not run with the diligence or the reliability that .au has been run. Australians will legitimately, people living in Sydney and Melbourne, will have certain expectations about how their domain names act, and they're typically .au names. They expect a similar standard of service, albeit under a different set of rules, for Sydney and Melbourne. And what the Minister quite rightly saw was, if this were all to fall over, then OUTA, or the Minister would be getting letters and complaints, and OUTA would probably be called on to do something to assist as well. So it's just interesting from there's a lack of clarity around the city names and the area names, and I'm just conscious of tracking that and how it plays out in this process to see if there's ever any liberalisation towards country and territory names, for it to be clear when we get to that stage. Did anyone else want to make any other general comments about where we are with GTLDs at the moment? I'd welcome others to raise examples. Again, not picking on the process, it's just because it's the one that's right in front of us at the moment. We will do the same with the results that come back from the UNESCO survey when they eventually come in. But I certainly think this has been a really, and particularly the one we've got up there on the screen, sorry, Henry, that's .ti for those on the phone, is a very pertinent example, and one that in terms of fleshing out our final report, because our job is, after all, to identify some of the issues that will arise or may arise out of the treatment of country and territory names, that's a perfect case study to put in there. I don't think I'd necessarily been able to find one so expansive where it is a claim to a country name, yet it doesn't necessarily fit under the official short form or long form title, not one of the checkboxes in the applicant guidebook. And yes, it does have government support, not particularly relevant in this instance, but it is an interesting twist. And then the issue of it being a direct transliteration of the IDN. It's just an interesting example of what happens and what we need to consider in future. If there weren't any final comments on that, I just wanted to touch on briefly, as I mentioned, the outcomes of this working group and where we take our recommendations and what our final report is to look like. And I apologise for putting the rather long-winded, apologies Bart, cut and paste from our scope and purposes document, but this is precisely how what we were supposed to do is described for the benefit of Henry. A comprehensive, we're supposed to, at the end of our work, deliver a comprehensive overview of issues arising or likely to arise in connection with applying the current and proposed policies, guidelines and procedures for allocation to types and categories of strings currently used or proposed to be used as TLDs that are either associated with countries and territories and or are otherwise considered representations of country and territory names. That needs a full stop. But broadly speaking, exactly what we've done. We look at the ICANN policies. What does the GTLD process look like? What are the policies for IDM PDP or the CCPDP or the fast track look like? Come up with a whole bunch of examples, which we're already doing and have done, and this process has brought out some. What happens when you... This is the long-winded way of saying what happens when you mash the two together and you apply the policies that we have to some of the names and the representations that we've come up with. Now, basically, at the end of it... That long first sentence says, we develop an overview of the issues. So our final report is, this is what is. This is the circumstances, these are the circumstances at the moment, and this is what we observe from applying policies to what we see out there and what country names may come up. We've got a little bit of wriggle room there because we can then, as the next paragraph says, if we consider it appropriate, we can advise on a course of further actions. So my literal reading of that is... Right, there are some problems here, there are some inconsistencies. This representation of a country would end up as a GTLD, this representation of a country would end up as a CCTLD, or it's ineligible for the IDN fast-track process, like the example we gave with Russia, because of various rules. We make those observations, we don't judge that to be a problem, etc., but rather that there is an inconsistency, And then where do we go to resolve it? I mean, do people in this group, does anyone hold strongly how far we go in terms of what we recommend or what our product should be or what you would like or what you would envisage our output to look like? It's intentionally an open-ended question at this stage because I don't want to predetermine the outcomes of the group. Noting, of course, that the reporting in the first instance is to the CCNSO Council because they're the ones that establish this group. A very open question, but did anyone have a comment on that at the moment? Annabeth, please.
It is a little earlier to say, but our job is to identify potential problems and to try to find the ways what can happen. And it's a lot of hypothetical things as well. We don't know yet. But if we find a lot of problems, our way forward must be to advise the council to establish a working group so the study group transfers or new people come into a working group to find a way to solve the problems that we have identified. That's my view.
Good. Well, I see a few nodding heads, and thank you. That's roughly speaking the way I'm working towards, and we are assuming here that we come back and say, oh, there are problems. So the view of the study group by the end of the process could be there's no problems here, move on. But yes, certainly, I don't think we would go much further than that. My expectation would be we could go so far as recommend additional work and perhaps some scoping comments or some observations as to what that work might look like and what we would like developed. You know, I'll take off the chair's hat and just offer my personal observation. If I were to want to see that we've delivered something meaningful, I would try to describe it to all constituents, being conscious that it's not just CCNSO people here by any means, that we need to get to a place where the way in which country and territory names are treated in current or future or possible ICANN policy processes, it's consistent across all processes so that everybody's got a degree of confidence, it's predictable, and people will know what, if you're going to go up against country and territory name, you need to know what it is and have a clear definition of that. Now, that doesn't mean a list. That doesn't mean a set of rules. It might mean a framework. It might mean some guidelines. I'm not sure what it would be. But this is good for CCs because they know where their turf is and where it isn't. It's good for governments because they'd have a good idea or have a clearer idea of what they would be asserting rights over. And it's good for people who actually want to make a dollar legitimately out of GTLDs, because they would know they've got some clarity when they're going to cross a line or when they're not, because obviously Google didn't. So that's a valid point. That's something that helps us have a greater understanding. It's going to be of use to all of the community, and that's hopefully where I'd see us go. But I leave it as an open-ended question. I'll raise it a couple of times. We don't need to get to it yet, but do want everyone to keep it in mind, because I am aware that in the context of the community, there are some that will expect or fear that this study group will come back and say country names should forever be protected, and here is the long master list of what is a country and territory name, and they shall never be touched for any process. Some fear or expect that will be the outcome. So it's certainly our responsibility to help clarify that to the rest of the community. Our time's pretty much up. I didn't have any other comments. Heather's got her hand up, so sort of welcome any further remarks before we wrap up.
Thanks, Paul. Just to ask a quick question, I'm just going to scroll up my notes to remind myself. One of the first slides that we had up had to do with, was it progress report? For those of us who don't have the benefit of, who come from GNSO constituencies and are representing those constituencies, what is the status of the progress report? Let's say we don't have the benefit of the CCNSO meeting to have that update.
Okay, well, thank you. Look, in terms of when I referred to, I'll get to that, and I talked about briefing community members in Prague, it's an interesting point that I've actually spoken to the GAC and I've spoken to the GNSO and made presentations about our work and haven't done so to the CCNSO yet. So when I speak to them tomorrow, this will be the first time. So please don't feel like you're behind the times there in any way, because the last time this group met, it was basically a few of us sitting up at the front of the stage in Singapore saying this is what will become the study group. So I will do a presentation, and it's basically going to be these slides, and you've all seen them before, so that'll be good to cover that off. The progress report is just a very brief mechanism, which I initially intended to be much longer than it was, though with Bart's encouragement have culled it down to 2 pages, which is simply a statement of this is where what the group has done to date. And roughly speaking, these are our next steps and the time frames that we expect to get to. I haven't even shared that with the full membership of this group, but we'll have a look at it. We'll just double check I haven't misrepresented anything, and we'll send it to everyone here, and then everyone is more than welcome to send it, circulate it out amongst their constituencies. Don't get too excited. As I said, it's nothing more than a couple of pages, but we will most definitely share that. And that day is not. Sorry,
that was my question. Just to clarify, so is that a this week thing? Should I go back to constituency and say, this is...
Yeah. Bart and I have to sit down and have a look to make sure I haven't messed anything up, and that's it. So, yep.
Good.
And we'll certainly encourage...
for my time than anything else.
No worries. And just to...
And my habit of doing everything last minute.
I didn't catch. It's just bad hearing. You said you briefed the GAC. Have you briefed the GNSO? The meeting schedule is just swamped right now, and it's all these overlapping sessions, so I might have missed it.
It was not at this meeting, but I mean, it was actually so far in advance that it was at the Costa Rica meeting,
okay.
and that was GAC in full plenary there with the CCNSO GAC joint session, and then basically it was one of the issues covered off on our typical GNSO council, CCNSO council lunches. And to be honest, it actually wasn't that much short of where we're at now, because we've been in a bit of a stasis period, or at least we've been discussing hypotheticals, which are important but not immediately relevant in terms of progressing with outputs to the community. So that was the update. Absence of any last comments, thanks very much for your time, everyone. We do have one more, sorry.
It's just a question. Is it possible to get a copy of your number 4 chart, which I think it summarizes everything and categorizes it? I just wanted to share, and if possible, to share it with ALAC.
Yes, absolutely, and that is completely the intent, and I'm also conscious of the fact that ALAC is one of the groups that we haven't, like, I didn't actually sit down and make time, or haven't had time, but we will, to actually say this is what we're working through, because it is important we do that. All material is obviously available on our site, but yes, I will in particular make that available and for them to disseminate, so, and very happy for everyone to share. There's nothing that is Chatham House rules, or I know, I apologise that these meetings are nominally marked as closed sessions, but it's not the case, and there is not anything that, from the purposes of this working group, that can't be shared with others. Even our minutes and our transcripts are up on the CCNSO site, which is not behind a firewall, so certainly everything's happy to share everything. Thank you all again for your time. We will have a brief session on Thursday. Keep an eye out on your emails, because there's a possibility of rescheduling. We'll see how we go at this stage. We'll have a conversation. You may not need it, but we'll keep the opportunity open, and I'll certainly let you know where and when as soon as we know. Thank you. Thank you, Henry.
Thanks, Paul. Bye-bye.